just want to pick up on a related but slightly different part of the question. First of all, I want to say, and I had it written down here and didn't say it, that we do believe that access to quality, affordable childcare is a right for both children and families and the people who work in the system. So, sorry I left that out. I'll just say on the broader question, I mean, many of us, I think, spend a lot of time in the middle of the night scratching our head and saying, why not? Like, how is it that all these years later, with this change in the nature of our communities and the participation of women in the labor force and the women's movement and all of the research we know about children, how is it that we haven't moved forward in Canada? And there clearly, Lynn speaks to broad global forces. But my answer is just a little bit, you know, the answers I've come up with, for whatever they're worth, are a little bit sort of closer to the harder home than some of those. The first is that I think that we continue, in spite of the reality, to be highly ambivalent about the role of women. And there is a tremendous barrier to taking what is still viewed as the private responsibility of women into the public domain. And so the research about the importance of the early years still mainly translates into programs that really don't address the needs of women who are working. So I think that's a fundamental ambivalence that still exists, and it exists amongst us, it exists amongst women, it exists amongst women who work in the field. So there's that. There's no question that there's a very high cost. Well, I don't think it's a high cost, but at a time when government has been preoccupied with deficit reduction and reducing the size of government, to introduce a new social program that we say at a minimum needs 1% of gross domestic product, which is about 10 to 15 billion a year in Canada, is not an easy political sell. And the third is that, is that because of the very problems that we identify in the system, not enough people have really experienced what access to quality, affordable, community-based childcare would be. And only when there is bold political leadership to create a system so that people experience that, do we know what it is we will lose, and therefore are mobilized to keep it if it's threatened. It's very difficult for people, on top of the early years being the most stressful time, people are earning the least. You know, at the time people get their kids to the school system, for the most part, they sort of go phew and move on. But without a broad base of people who understand and have experienced the vision, it is a difficult thing for people to positively mobilize around. So for what it's worth, on top of the globalization issues, those are some of, I think, the barriers we faced.
And just to touch briefly on the globalization issues, because we, in many ways, it's hard for us to remember, because our governments certainly don't remind us, is that under NAFTA and a whole complicated web of international trade agreements, some of which are still being negotiated and protested, once a service provided by the public is let open to tender, or especially international tender, it's very difficult and extremely costly for a government to take it back, because it leaves itself open to suit by multinational companies for lost opportunity. Which, let me move back a step from that. Why would governments therefore introduce these programs and put them out to tender, or open them up to the corporate world if it doesn't make sense? Precisely because they're lobbied very hard and contributed to by these same corporations who want to get that foot in the door, because they know once the foot's in, their whole body's in, and that's about it.
That's why it's so incredibly important in these stages. There will be decisions made that cannot be changed. And that...
Well, they cannot be changed easily, but, you know, people make history.
All right, then. Yes.
I may not get the most receptive audience here, but I'm with the Canadian Federation of Independent Business, representing 105,000 small and medium-sized businesses across Canada. The people often find themselves trapped between the public sector and big multinationals, so, you know, the under 10 employee businesses who are trying to survive. Could you address the role you see in this province moving forward for the small and medium-sized business sector in providing quality, private, for-profit childcare for the parents who do want it, who do choose it? Anyone?
Do you want to comment on
that? What I can tell you happened in Australia is that you'd be the first to go. Really, the publicly listed companies will compete with anyone who's providing, and it's been a real threat to our small commercial providers once you've had, you know, 2, 3, 4 services.
There was a program on Feel Good, had a very interesting program on last, I believe it was Friday.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much ambiguity out there with the public, with providers, as to this for-profit, non-profit situation. And I think, as you said, I think the issue here is because we, in the CFIB, have a lot of daycare members that are concerned right now as to what's going to happen. They don't know. And as you're saying, that it's going to be both that are threatened.
Yep.
By the corporate community that's coming in. And if you don't take a stand and make a strong stand now, you're right, it'll be too late.
Okay.
So, I would
just stand up.
Okay.
I'm not much taller.
No, I know. It's available. I just wanted to say what the position is on this question of the Coalition of Child Care Advocates of BC. Susan said it earlier. The Coalition of Child Care Advocates has for many years called for expansion in the development of a community-based not-for-profit system. We understand that is something we move towards. We have always supported the grandmothering of existing small privately run child care programs in the province, and who are prepared to be accountable for the public dollars that they receive. And accountability is a principle we hold across the board for public dollars. And that's why this issue becomes so important now, because there are significant public dollars on the table. But we do support that expansion should be through the not-for-profit sector, that existing private operators who want to operate in a part of a publicly funded system and are prepared to be accountable should and need to continue to exist in our community. We have no intention or desire or ability to see that replaced. They are an important part of the care, but that we need to not just build on the patchwork we have now, we need to set some new goals about where it is we head. So that's our position.
And I just want to speak from a private business person's point of view, although I will say that was not the first choice in our community. It was the only way that we could open up childcare spaces. And I know that's the experience of many people who are operating private facilities right now. It's a little bit up against it, and we can't have it both ways. So for instance, under the current funding, the increase, the 36.6, I think it is, percent increase to CCOF that is going out to programs is to be used as the program sees fit. In our program, and I will say it proudly, because I am an ethical person who believes in community development and wages for workers, 100% of that is going into wages. I don't think you as taxpayers should sit back and hope that I'm ethical. I mean, somebody else could decide that what they need best for their child care program is a new car for themselves. That is the accountability that is so wide open right now. And as a taxpayer, I don't think that's okay. It's not that I am against private business, but when public dollars, significant public dollars, are going into private businesses, I think we as taxpayers should demand a much higher level of accountability. And that's why we take the stand we do. And I think, given the new international trade agreements, we can't live the way that we lived 20 years ago, where we had small, perhaps privately run centers, in a world that was kind of ambiguous about economics and trade agreements. Now in the new trade agreements, we have to be part of that discussion. And we can't sort of say, well, we want to keep doing it the same way when we're up against the big multinational corporations.
Just one other point, because I think it's a really important point that Lynn makes. One of the really, as we see, as we intend to, because we're going to continue to work for more money, as we see a higher, a more significant level of public investment, the issue about planning and ensuring that the assets the community builds stays in the community is another really important part of this discussion. We very much have a non-system now, like you describe, which is that individuals or parent boards or community services open services where they can. We have much higher level of service in affluent communities than we have in lower income communities because it's a user fee system. And if we're going to invest public funds, then the public has the right to expect that the expansion will be planned and that that service will exist in the community regardless of the individual decisions made by the people who work in it. When a teacher retires, the classroom doesn't close. We need to demand the same stability and asset building in child care as we do in every other sector. So there are a whole set of reasons why that makes sense for the future, recognizing we build from here to there.
And can I also say that, I mean, this is a free country as far as I know. And so in terms of private business, it's not about... No, there can be no private business, but taxpayers' public dollars should go into a public system eventually. And if we cut that off now, if we have a grandparenting clause now that says no new private business should get taxpayers' dollars, then we think that that's a way to allow existing spaces to remain open, but not open the door to the multinational. I mean, people can open up a private, they open up private schools, you know, they open up private all the time. You can open up a private business, but should you get taxpayers' dollars to do it in the long term? We don't think that's the kind of system that we should build. By the way, I don't know, it may have been your genius, but it was Penny Coates who first showed me that picture of the teacher in the classroom. I remember being at a meeting, Penny, and where you said, but it's when the teacher leaves you, and I thought, exactly, it's a very good way to think about it. Yeah. Oh, but you wanted recognition for that brilliance, let me give it to you. But it's a very important kind of visual, something we could all relate to. That would be horrendous, wouldn't it? Yeah. Another comment, question? Yes.
I'm not sure who to address this to, but in terms of the reality of the big box childcare provider, how real is that threat in Canada right now?
I do have it's how real is the big threat of a corporate childcare company coming here? Some interviews that he's done, he says he's doing... I'm one of them. I'm not going to name them because they are incredibly litigious. They sue everybody. But one of them, well, he said this, ABC did say Canada was next. That's where he wanted to come.
He's Canadian.
He is a Canadian national. He wasn't born here, but he's a Canadian national. And he loves Canada. And he'd love to come back here.
The statements have been made publicly. So you know that once the statements have been made publicly,
there's been a lot of private talk.
Susan, we have a funny anecdote from the tour for Lynn started in Ottawa on Friday, and we had a press conference in Ottawa, and a press release went out, and we Googled it. And very interestingly, KinderCare, which is the mega big box chain in the United States, had a button on our press release, which says that they're very interested in what's going on. We also learned if you buy a button on something you want to bring attention to yourself with, that you usually only buy a few hits, so we very busily hit it really hard, and it disappeared. So I think that is very telling. We're talking about Australia, but for them to be that quick with a press release that we dreamed up overnight, is pretty amazing.
Yeah. There's big machines behind these. That's what
did you see the movie The Corporation?
Yes.
I mean, you know, like it, but there are big machines behind this. Penny.
If you have a comment, I really would like to point to the fact that I think the Fraser region in particular is going to be an area where corporate childcare if they're going to move to. We've already had several calls in Surrey from franchise daycare centers from the States. One call from, I believe it's the Australian group that are interested in coming into Surrey. And people say, well, why Surrey? Well, one of the reasons is that it's got one of the worst child space ratios in the province. So there's very limited child care there. It has one of the lower areas of unionization, and so we don't have high wages. Because centers have to remain under the size of 10 spaces or less, unless they go through a rezoning process, many of the operators are these tiny, tiny little businesses out of their own homes, and they're just ripe for having some large franchise daycare center come in and open up, because they can afford the rezoning in Surrey. They can afford to move into the neighborhoods where people can pay, and then leave those neighborhoods where people can't afford to pay still without care. And with Fraser Region having 40% of the children in this province, they have a really open market to go after. So I just urge you, I mean, having been involved in Vancouver for years and years as a child care coordinator there, there were lots of things I could do as the child care coordinator that encouraged people to go elsewhere if they wanted to open up large businesses, by just telling them about the unionization and the expectations of quality and the kinds of things that the city of Vancouver really wanted to see in good quality child care centers. And they invariably either walked away and did not do child care anymore, or they moved further out to where there were municipalities and places that didn't put the same kinds of requirements and expectations on them. So I am extremely worried, and I do believe that Surrey is going to be one of the places where that battleground is going to be played out. And I do encourage people to look very seriously at the most important thing for these kids is not only the quality of care they have, but the additional supports that their parents can get through the other types of services. And we need to link the child care service and system into those other services and systems of family supports, health care services, recreation programs, and it has to be a community-based program.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just wanted to add to the discussion about I'm a child care worker. I work in a nonprofit, privately run center with a parent board. And I think one of the things about that type of a setup is it pits us as child care workers against the parents. And I think that that's one of the fundamental problems of a privatized system. Because when we go to our parent board and say, you know, we'd really like a wage increase for the first time in 5 years, the parents say, oh my God, our fees are going to go up. I'm working 3 jobs. I've got, you know, I never see my partner because he's working the night shift and I'm working the day, you know, whatever they're doing to afford childcare, they're worried that their fees are going to go up. So it seems as though our interests are different. It seems as though the interest of childcare workers to raise wages is in contrast with the parents' desire, demand, and need to keep fees, put fees lower than they already are, right? But I think that that's the privatized model. But if we really look at transforming childcare, which I think needs to be one of our basic demands, understanding childcare as a right, and if we transform it into understanding that it's a public system, so that when, as childcare workers, we say we deserve to be paid more. We deserve, I mean, who doesn't want health benefits, right? I mean, we go through a lot of stress health-wise. That we can be taking that to a public employer, not to the parents, so that the parents aren't going to be hurt by our legitimate demands. And that at the same time, when the parents' demands that the fees go down, we don't go, oh my God, I'm not going to get my paycheck at the end of the week, which I think has been really the reality for a lot of childcare workers with the current closures, the recent closures that have been happening. And in our work, I think that's one of the ways we found, George, we're saying we have to make links between families and childcare workers. Well, I think that's one of the ways we've found to do that is by really talking about how the current system pits us against each other, but how things could be different. And that's one of the things we want to work towards.
Yes. What you talk about is private. We don't call that private. A lot of our services are community management committees, and they are run by the parents. They are the management committee, and they do make the decisions about the wages. But the protection we have that you don't have is we have a wages system. And that's what the union, you know, has really done for us in Australia. We have a union system, and so it's not up to the parents to say whether the wages go up or not. I mean, they can add a bonus, they can pay higher than the award, but they can't go below it. So the issue, I think, for you is, and I don't know enough about your industrial relations system, but you need a wage structure that is non-negotiable, and you need to have the funding from the federal government that enables the service to operate. But, you know, we don't call that private, not private property.
We're all going, yeah, because of the...